For members only. Golf Smarter number 452, published on September 2, 2014, is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
The drought crisis of 2014 with Don Chimoletos of the Presidio.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast, Don.
Hi, Fred. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are things going in San Francisco today?
Well, it looks a little overcast outside, but
summer.
Yeah, it is summer. It is summer.
August and September. August in San Francisco, you can always tell the tourists because they're the ones who have the new fleece and pair of shorts and they're walking across the bridge freezing.
Exactly. Exactly.
What is the busiest time of year for you at the Presidio?
We're actually getting into it right now. It's probably September, October, November.
And the toughest time for you each year?
The last couple of years, typically it's probably December through March, but the last few years it's been pretty dry. So we've actually had very mild winters, and we've had a lot of golf rounds during the winter.
Yeah, the good news, bad news, right?
Yeah, short term, it's probably good news, but long term, I would consider it bad news.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a lot of why we're having this conversation today, is to talk about the water problem that's facing golf courses, not just in California, but there's like 14 states right now that are in drought conditions.
Yeah. Yeah. It's happening. Obviously there's climate change. People can debate all they want, but in this industry, we see it on a daily basis.
Those people are also debating whether gravity is just a theory or not, too.
And evolution.
Well, I don't want to go there. Gravity, I think we can just kind of
Okay.
It's not just a rule. It's the law. Okay.
Right.
I'm sorry for interrupting. So the drought conditions, it's whether it's climate change or not, we're in a bad, bad place right now here in California.
I agree. I would call it a crisis. There are a lot of people that, don't really feel the impact until the water stops coming out of their taps. But, I believe we're in a water crisis right now.
Mm. Before we get deeper into the water issues and how you're dealing with it and what other golf courses might be able to do, let's talk about the Presidio, because it's a pretty special place right in San Francisco. And, for people who haven't been, San Francisco is like a 7-mile by 7-mile square, hence the 49ers and all the numbers around 49 mile ride and things like that. But there's not a lot of room for golf courses, and San Francisco politics aren't really friendly to golf courses. Case in point, Harding Park.
Yes, depending on the neighborhood. One of the things that's interesting about San Francisco is it's made up of a lot of different boroughs or neighborhoods, and depending where a park or a golf course may be located, it could be theoretically friendly, or how much it costs, or how much the golf course makes. There are a lot of different factors involved, but Presidio Golf Course is definitely one of those that is it's a jewel of the cities. So
absolutely. So give us some history about the Presidio, how long it's been in San Francisco, and how it got started.
Well, originally it was started in 1895 by a group of golfers, avid golfers, who went to the Army, and they actually leased a plot of land on the Army base. And as you may know, Presidio, the actual base, has been here since prior to the Civil War. And in 1895, a group of businessmen and golfers went to the Army. They leased a plot of land. They laid out a nine-hole golf course. About 25 years later, they went back. They wanted to expand to 18 holes. They went back to the Army, asked for some additional space. The Army didn't want to give it to them. So they actually left that group. A part of that group left and went and built San Francisco Golf Club. So this was the original San Francisco Golf Club. And then a few years later, you know, they got a general on the base who loved golf, and he actually changed his mind, gave them some additional land, and they built 18 holes. And so in approximately 1920, the golf course was designed by Thomas Simpson and Herbert Fowler, who are, you know, quite notable, famous golf course architects. And they laid out the original 18 holes here in Presidio in about 1920.
So was the course open to the public when they opened?
The golf course was not open to the public, which is kind of interesting because the original clubhouse still exists and, from the 19th century. And it actually exists within the Presidio Terrace. So the front door of the clubhouse, you would come in through the Presidio Terrace, and then to access the golf course, you'd go out the back door of the clubhouse, which was open onto the actual Army base, and it was really only open to those members and also to the military. And then in 1995, when the base was earmarked for closure, it became part of the National Park Service, and at that point, it was open to the public.
What kind of statement is it that you had to go out the back door to go play golf?
You know, my feeling is they probably liked the idea. You know, they could sneak in and out the back door and go play a round of golf. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I've always enjoyed it, except during the winter. To be completely honest with you, in the wet winters that we've had, it's a tough course to play because you sometimes feel like you're ankle high in water.
Well, you know, that it's interesting that you should say that because up until about 2006, the golf course had a reputation as being pretty much unplayable, you know, along the lines with like Lincoln Park. Mm-hmm. And in 2006, the Presidio Trust, who now oversees the golf course, actually started putting money into drainage. And from 06 until 2011, we spent about $1 million on drainage so we could actually get out there and mow the fairways and mow the roughs. And the golf course is in incredible shape year round now.
Great. And, you know, I got the chance to play out at Paso Tiempo last week and we had a conversation with them. And Santa Cruz is having a real difficult time with water right now.
Yeah, you know, there are a lot of counties that are doing that. I hear that the East Bay is having some pretty harsh troubles with their water situation also, as is, you know, San Francisco, Marin County, and most counties around the Bay Area.
Well, it's interesting. I downloaded from the NCGA, Northern California Golf Association, they put out how to implement a golf course drought contingency plan. I'm sure you're very well aware of what their feelings are about this. But they encourage deep and infrequent irrigation cycles. They want you to clean off all the equipment with pressurized air instead of water. Lots of little things. And how to, what percentage of the amount of water goes in which part of the golf course. I found
right.
that really interesting of, you know, and what levels they're at. The drought restrictions, they say there's four stages. There's drought watch, which is up to 10% voluntary reduction. Drought alert, 20% mandatory. Drought critical, up to 40% mandatory. And then more than 40% drought emergency mandatory restrictions.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of that really depends on the individual golf course also. I mean, it's just like operating a golf course from a marketing standpoint. You know, you can't, to me, those are kind of guidelines. Mm-hmm. You had mentioned at the beginning deep and infrequent watering practices. I mean, that's just good agronomic practice. You know, in the olden days, olden meaning, you know, 20, 30 years ago, golf course superintendents sometimes would water every night, you know, and they'd run a 5 or 10 minute cycle. And my feeling is that grass is a lot like people. It can get a little lazy if you let it. Well, if you do frequent, deep and infrequent cycling of water, you're going to get the roots to grow down a lot deeper, because the grass is going to get, it's going to be a lot healthier. It's going to go down and it's going to search for that water. And if you're watering every night and frequently, the roots won't grow. So I think that first thing that you mentioned, that's just good agronomic practice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what is it that that the Presidio is doing that is unique to deal with the drought issue?
Well, about 6 weeks ago, you know, my superintendent and I, we're always looking at this, and we basically we irrigate based on extranspiration rate, which basically means how much water is evaporates out of the ground each night. And so what we like to do is we get the grass to a level where it's still alive and somewhat growing. And then based on how much wind that you might get that day, how much sun you might get, you're going to get a certain amount of evaporation and also uptake of the plant of water. And then we'll put down that amount of water on a night's watering cycle. And here at Presidio, as I mentioned about 6 weeks ago, we started looking at the golf course and saying, you know, it's going to be a crisis, and it's only going to get worse. And so we have what we call the back five loop, which is holes 12 through 16. And we wanted to do some experimentation for a couple reasons. We wanted to see how much water we could cut back and not affect play in a negative way. And we also wanted to get the reaction back from the golfer, not only as far as playability, but as far as aesthetics go, and also, you know, how they felt about the drought and what their feelings were. You know, golf is a recreational sport, and it's clearly an important activity for a lot of people, but it's not as critical as you know, losing all of our water, you know, in our aquifers and our lakes. So we started a program where we were cutting back certain areas of our golf course, primarily in the roughs and the fairway perimeters, to see how much water we could actually save on those back fives and then get feedback from golfers as to playability. And we cut back our roughs about 70%. We cut back our fairway perimeters by 60%, and we continue to water down the center of the fairways at 100% and greens and tees at 100%. And what we found was that it saved us about 26% of our water. And over those 6 weeks, on those just those five holes, we were able to save about 600,000 gallons of water.
That's significant.
It's definitely significant. And I mean, if you correlate that to the rest of the golf course, you know, you're looking at saving it about 1 million gallons a month.
Wow. So. And how does that equate into cost?
Well, we pay San Francisco Municipal Utility District, and it costs us $9 per 1,000 gallons. So,
it's significant. Please don't say do the math. I cannot do that.
Yeah, no. It's a significant savings.
Yeah. That's amazing. I did take a picture when I played out there recently with my son. I took a picture of your sign, and I'll post that on our blog post as well. What has been the reaction from the players?
It's been overwhelmingly positive. Every single comment that we've received every single comment that we've received from golfers has been positive. The only it's actually kind of funny. We had two negative comments, and those comments were, why aren't you doing this to the rest of the golf course? So they were, you know, it was positive in a, you know, in the good direction. So,
yeah. Wow. So, and what have, other than the savings of water and stuff, what have you noticed on course conditions?
Well, we definitely have a lot more brown areas, and we're working on fine tuning it. Our goal is to hit somewhere between 20% and 25% savings, but you know, that's a very subjective number, because a lot of that has to do with, as I'd mentioned earlier, our extranspiration rate. And so if we're having a lot of wind, if we're having a lot of sun, then we would be putting more water down than we normally might do. If we have, you know, cloudy and overcast days, or even if we get a little bit of rain, then we would be putting less water down than we normally would. But what we're looking at is what our normal irrigation cycle would be, which is somewhere between 700,000 and 750,000 gallons a night, and what our new irrigation cycle would be, which would be somewhere in the neighborhood of about 550,000 gallons a night. So, but that's significant.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah. But you're also in a unique position where San Francisco is generally pretty moist. You know, you have a lot of, I don't want to say humidity in the classic sense of what we think of hot humidity, but because you're surrounded by water on three sides and you are really close to the water, you know, you probably get a lot of moisture. Does that have any impact versus rain?
It does, but it actually has very little impact. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like syringing your lawn in the middle of a hot afternoon. I mean, it may keep it alive, but it doesn't actually do anything to feed the plant. And another thing that people don't always take into consideration that is almost as significant, if not more so, than the sun is wind. And because of where we are, you know, right next to the Golden Gate Bridge, it gets incredibly windy here. And that wind pulls out a lot of moisture out of the ground. And so even if you've got moisture in the air, if you've got wind blowing across your, you know, across your fairways, it's still pulling out a lot of moisture out of the ground.
Don, this episode of the Golf Smarter podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. Audible would like to provide the Golf Smarter listeners an opportunity to try Audible with a free audiobook of your choice from their enormous library. Now, one audiobook to consider is 11/22/63, a novel written by Stephen King. Now, I haven't read it, but after a recommendation from a friend and this review, I'm very tempted to download it for my upcoming vacation to Mexico. Here's the review that's written, and it's the review's called "I Owe Stephen King an Apology." Stephen King on writing is one of my favorite books, and I read it every couple of years. I recommend it to my students and suggest that they read it every year. However, that is the only one of King's books that I've been able to read. I've tried many times, but kept getting bogged down after 20 or 30 pages. The stories were okay, but couldn't hold my interest because the writing seemed too heavy-handed, brutish, like he was typing with his fists. It was with great reluctance that I downloaded 11/22/63. The reviews were good, glowing, in fact, and I've learned to trust the opinions of Audible listeners. Plus, the book is more than 30 hours long, which the bargain hunter in me always finds attractive. Well, I just finished it tonight. It was a wonderful and fascinating story, based loosely on an English teacher's obsession with Lee Harvey Oswald and the possibility of going back in time to prevent the Kennedy killing. The writing is wonderful, masterful, vivid, compelling. The characters are rich and deep, genuine, involved, and I find myself thinking about them and their lives often throughout the day. Well worth every minute, made doubly valuable by the excellent and interesting reading by Craig Wasson. Totally believable, wonderfully surprising. So, That's a very compelling recommendation. And have I told you about the Audible's Great Listen Guarantee? If you choose a book and you decide you don't like it, you can exchange it for another title anytime, no questions asked. So for a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. That's audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. Now, Don, you mentioned before we started recording that you guys purchased a drone equipped with a camera.
Yeah.
To help you with this process. Explain that. Yeah. I thought that was amazing. I want to call every golf course I know going, these guys got a drone.
yeah. It's pretty cool. And, we kind of, Brian Netz is our superintendent, and a good friend of his is the superintendent over at Cal Club. And that's where Brian got the idea from. And he came to me and he said, hey, Cal Club has this drone. What do you think about this? I'm like, absolutely.
I mean, are you a geek?
I think it's very cool, but I didn't get it just for the just to have a copter. We really did get it so that we could use it. One of the things we actually started doing last year that goes hand in hand with the drone is we hired a couple guys, seasonal guys, to basically go out there every single day and hit hot spots with hoses. And so the drone, what that enables us to do is go up in the air. It's a copter with a gimbal under it, and it's got a GoPro hanging off the bottom. We can fly it up and down the fairways, and we can identify what we call hot spots, which are areas that are browning out where the grass is kind of going from a stressed condition into a dormant condition. And guys can go out there with hoses and they can hit those and basically keep them alive and growing versus having to turn on your entire irrigation system. So the labor, the additional labor that we're spending on having more manpower out there irrigating with hoses, we're actually saving all of that in water and electrical costs from irrigation.
Explain to me also about treetops, what you're using the drones for. I love that.
Yeah. So, as kind of a side thing, we got this drone so we could identify hotspots, so we could take a look at our native areas. Another thing that we've been doing is we earmarked about 12 acres throughout the golf course that we converted from what we call maintained turf, which would be, your ryes and your blues and Bermuda grasses that you mow every day and you irrigate, to fescue grasses that are more water tolerant. We don't have to mow them. We don't even have to maintain them. We just kind of let them go. And so we got the drone so we could identify hotspots, so we could identify areas where we could put in fescues. But then something else that we found is when we get high enough, we can actually fly over our trees, and we have thousands of trees here, not only in the golf course, but throughout the park. And we can identify early detection of disease in the crowns of these trees. So we can actually fly over our trees. If we see some disease, we can actually attack that disease, maybe get the tree out of there, cut away that bad part before it starts to infect other trees. So the drone has had, several really good byproducts of
benefits.
The
benefits. Yeah. Right. I mean, it sounds like it's already paid for itself.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Because now what's happening with these crowns on the trees is, I guess you can capture something or prevent something from happening, which could be dangerous along the way if, you're not aware of the disease in the tree and you're going to start losing branches, limbs, or even a tree, the entire tree, right?
That's correct. Yeah. Well, that tree, and then disease can jump from tree to tree and you can lose more trees. So, and
especially if it's that windy.
Yeah, it's early detection. It's like, prostate screening.
Yeah, just like it. Just stick a finger in it and it's fine. Enough of that. Okay. So you're more than just a golf course administrator. You've been a PGA pro for a long time, correct?
Long time.
Worked at many different courses, given lessons to a lot of people.
A lot of people.
You were at Stanford for a while.
I was at Stanford for 14 years, yeah.
So probably some famous people.
Some presidents.
Some secretaries of state?
Some secretaries of state. I gave Condi lessons for years.
For number one in the world golfers? Former number ones?
Well, I've never given Tiger a lesson, but I played with Tiger.
What's wrong with you?
Well, you know, he's always had his his teaching pros.
But you were there when he was there.
Oh, yeah.
Were you coaching the team?
No. At the time, our coach was Wally Goodwin at that time.
All right. I just wanted to, and Condi, you've given Condoleezza Rice lessons too.
I did. I started Condi off in her life of golf. I was giving her lessons.
Oh, it's your fault.
Yeah, it's my fault.
And how? And did she?
It's actually her fault, but I helped in that. So.
Was she good? She's pretty athletic, huh? Or she's just
she's
a sports
pretty
junkie?
Athletic. Yeah. Well, both. Yeah, she's pretty athletic. She's got a good swing. You know, she's very committed. She's very driven. So very focused.
Yeah. So the fact that you've given these people lessons, the fact that you are a PGA professional, I need advice from you on when you go out to golf courses and they're drying up like this, and you've got a lot of hard pan, you've got a lot of brown spots. And I'm sure that you're selecting parts of the fairway where you track the balls are going to land more than if the ball's in the air, you're going to green those up. But what do we need to know as weekend hacks? What do we need to know about playing on hard pan?
Well, when you're playing on a surface, more often than not, you're probably going to want to move the ball back in your stance a little bit. And you're also going to want to take, maybe a little bit less club and play more of a bump and run. Here in the United States, we have very few golf courses that actually play bump and run golf like they do over in Europe. And, my feeling about drying up the golf courses or identifying and targeting the irrigation that we're using on the greens and the tees and certain parts of the fairways, it's just the right thing to do. And I think that it's just about educating golfers and getting them to realize that, there is more important things in life than just golf. And as far as playing those types of golf courses, I think part of the reason we're getting such positive feedback is people are getting a lot more roll, and the golf courses are actually becoming a lot easier for some people, at least the driving portion of it. And, they're finding that it's actually a little bit more fun. It's a different game, as opposed to target golf, hitting from A to B to C, from the tee into a fairway where it plugs and then onto the green where it stops on a dime. You have to use a little bit more imagination. There are a lot of golfers out there that are very good at this type of golf. You look at somebody like a Tom Watson. Tom's always done well, over in England because he's very creative in the British Open because he's very creative. He knows what to do. Even this year, Mickelson was trying to talk a lot of the younger guys into going in early and playing in the, I think it was the Irish Open, because you got to get used to this type of golf. And it's a different type of mentality playing bump and run game than it is carrying it all the way into the fairway or all the way into the green.
Well, that kind of it supports the play it forward campaign, where they're wanting you to tee up a little bit farther forward, so you're just hitting like an 8-iron, like the pros do, hitting a short wedge, high lofted club into the green. So because you're getting so much, you probably have people coming into the pro shop every day going, "My God, I'm hitting the ball better today than I've ever hit it." Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's so interesting because it's so hard. But the greens are still holding on to your approach shots?
The actual greens themselves, yeah. We're still irrigating the greens as much as we always have, but the approaches were not. And so if a ball's coming into the approach, it could easily bounce off that approach and roll all the way through the green. So it takes a little bit more imagination. When you've got a shot, if I'm standing out in the fairway and I've got 150 yards into a green, I can play it. Now I can play it multiple ways. I mean, when everything was is wet or moist, you basically have to hit that shot 150 yards and carry it all the way to the green. But now with the dry approaches, I could play at 135 or 140 yards and I can, you know, play a bump and run and run it up onto the green. So it takes a little bit more imagination. There's more thought that goes into it. So to me, I think it's a lot more interesting game.
Yeah, when you have more creativity for guys like you who've got all the shots and can shape your shots and do all that stuff, I can see where you'd find a new challenge. This would be make it a little more fun for you.
Yeah, it is. It is. You know, the same thing kind of happens with the fairways where, you know, maybe I'm hitting a, you know, my normal drive may go 270, 280, and now it's going 300 yards. Well, that 300 yards, it may roll through the fairway and into the rough. So I may be hitting a three. I may need to hit a three wood now as opposed to a driver. And so even off the tee, not just into greens, but even off the tee, you have to think about it. I mean, it's like, where do I want to hit this shot from? If you have a dog leg and you're driving the ball onto hard pan, it could go all the way through and be stuck under a tree. So yeah, it's a lot more thinking that goes into the game.
But is it more than just setting the ball back farther in your stance? Because I know that, you know, so many people are just sweepers. They're not coming down on it. They're not getting the divot after they hit the ball. They're generally, if they're getting a divot at all, it's 4 inches before the ball, yeah. Right? So this starts getting into their head. So there's got to be more than just setting the ball different.
Yeah, there's. I mean, it's a process. It's a lot more than that. I mean, that's just one of the things that I would suggest to most people if they find that they're, you know, bouncing the club into the ball. When the turf is wet, it's a lot more forgiving. You know, not soggy, but just a little damp where you can take a divot. If you're hitting behind the ball, you may catch the ball a little bit high on the club face. But if it's hard, you know, if it's like a tabletop and you hit behind the ball, chances are you're going to get a lot of bounce from the club and then you're going to belly the ball. And so, you know, I usually tell my students, you know, place it a half an inch to three quarters of an inch, a little bit farther back in your stance just so you catch it clean. It's going to come out a little bit lower, but you're going to be able to control the ball a little bit better. Mm. So,
awesome advice. Thank you. I appreciate that. Back to course care at the Presidio. One of the other things that I noticed is that you got goats. I have a picture that I took of goats just having a blast at one of the tee box. It was the 18th tee box, I think it was, that day. There was like a dozen goats there. What's up with that?
Yeah, we have some pretty happy goats. Probably the happiest golf course goats that I know. You know, I started my career back in 1984 at Tilden Park Golf Course
in Berkeley.
And the East Bay Parks, or the Tilden Parks, used to use goats up in the hillsides to eat blackberries and, you know, noxious weeds, poison oak, things where you couldn't get people to go in and weed whack. And I remember that when I got here at Presidio, you know, I was sitting around one day and I was talking to my superintendent and I told him, look, you got to get into the, and it was this area behind our driving range that was collecting all of our range balls. And our maintenance staff didn't want to go in there because we had poison oak in there. And, you know, Brian's telling me, I can't get the guys to go in. They're going to catch poison oak. They refuse to go in there with weed whackers. I'm like, well, we need to figure out a way to get our range balls back because, you know, we've got an expense in this and we need these range balls. And so I thought back, it just kind of dawned on me back at my days at Tilden of getting some goats. And so I presented my superintendent with the idea. At first he thought I was crazy and I said, let's just try it. And so we went out, this was 2 years ago, it was in 2012. We hired a company to bring in 600 goats and we kind of made a media day out of it. We invited the public here, we posted on Facebook. And we ended up having about 200 people. They brought their kids out here to see the goats and meet the goats. And it was huge publicity. People loved it. But better than that, the goats worked. We had these 600 goats in about 3 weeks. And we basically rented them.
Okay.
In about 3 weeks, they ate about 2.5 acres of noxious weeds.
Wow.
And so the following year, we decided we were going to buy our own herd. And so we did. We basically went out and we purchased 15 goats and we just moved them around the golf course, and they love it here. We put them in areas. We have fencing, and we move the fencing around, and we just kind of hopscotch and move them to different areas of the golf course where we either have blackberries or blackberry bushes, poison oak. We may have some thistle in there, and they love it. Ivy, you know, and they eat it, and it takes care of these areas for us, and it's wonderful.
And it's entertaining. It's like we came off the green like, oh my God, there's goats here.
Yeah.
That was awesome. I'm sure, though, that 15 goats was not a stagnant number. I mean, a static number. I'm sure that you have more than 15 now. You've got
No, no, no. Well, actually, so what we did was we bought 15 from the same guy who we rented the 600 from.
Okay. Oh, okay.
And the day he dropped them off, he failed to tell this in advance, but after he dropped off, he said, oh, by the way, 7 of them are pregnant. So they had their kids this year in February, and we ended up giving him 22, ended up being a little more than we could handle because they still eat quite a bit of space. We put them in a pen that's about 8,000 to 10,000 square feet. And we like to move them at a pace of about every 3 to 5 weeks. We don't want to I don't want my superintendent to be a full-time goat herder. So if he can move them on average like once a month, it's perfect. Because it takes a few hours to set up the fence. You take a bucket of oats and they follow you over to the new fence, and then you drop them in there and you leave them for a month, and then you move them to the next spot. And 22 was a little much. We were having to move them about every 2 weeks. So we gave 7 of them back, and we're back down to 15, and there will be no more kids.
Oh, you now have fixed goats.
We have, yeah, they're all fixed.
They're all fixed. They fix the course, you fix the goats.
Exactly. It worked out well.
That's amazing. And it's entertaining to come across these goats. I love the wildlife on golf courses.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it's a very natural way to take care of it. I mean, you look at some of the old golf courses, the way they used to take care of the fairways was with sheep. They would just send sheep out to graze in the fairways. So
did you get any pushback from your maintenance crew? It's like, wait a minute, you're taking my work away. It's like, wait, you refuse to do it.
They love the goats because they're in there dealing with the blackberry and the poison oak and the things they don't want to deal with. So,
and do they name these goats? Do they have?
Oh, like, yeah.
And these goats have personalities and everything.
They definitely have personalities.
So there's like the main goat. He's like, this is my house type of.
Yeah, it's actually she. Her name is Spot. Yeah, she is the main goat.
And how does she assert herself?
She'll get up on top of a log or up on top of a tree branch, and she, you know, people try and knock her off, and she just pushes them away. But there's definitely a hierarchy within the group.
Okay, so that's the picture I have, because she is definitely above all the other goats.
Yeah.
That was Spot.
That was Spot.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Back to the drought issue. There are courses that are closing in California, and it's a shame, but you know, it's not just the lack, I hate saying the lack of interest, but the fact that the golf industry is losing customers on a regular and rapid basis, but now courses are going to have to close, not just because lack of business, but because they can't maintain it.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's and again, here in Presidio, I mean, we actually sit on federal land, so we're actually not required to follow these restrictions, but we do so voluntarily because we just think it's the right thing to do. And, between myself and my superintendent, Brian Netz, we're going to cut back as much as we can without negatively impacting play. So
it's terrible. What's the difference, and I'm curious what you use, between recycled water, potable water, Do you know the difference there and what you get to use versus what other courses, how they do it?
Well,
I played a course in Petaluma that was soaking wet.
Really?
Yeah. Rooster Run. I mean, the golf cart's wheels were spinning. It was so wet.
Huh. Okay. Well, yeah, I'm not so familiar with their situation, but, yeah, you know, effluent water or, you know, water that has been cleaned is, it just depends on how it's cleaned. Mm. You know, there's been talk about us switching over to effluent water, but we actually don't have the piping that comes over to the golf course or into the park for that yet. I believe we're shooting for about 2019 to do that. Right now we get our water from basically through the Hetch Hetchy system, San Francisco Municipal Utility District.
So it's fresh water.
Yeah, it's fresh water.
And yeah. I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with the word effluent.
Effluent would just be, you know, water that's gone through treatment, treatment plant. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your time and, you know, sharing this information because this is really important stuff right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's important. I think golfers really need to embrace it. And, you know, I would like to see golfers put a little bit more pressure on golf courses to move in this direction and you know, basically do the right thing and you know, kind of not necessarily lower their expectations, but change their expectations and understand that, you know, water is a valuable commodity and resource and, you know, we shouldn't be wasting it just on watering rough or things like that, that really areas that where it's not necessary.
How's that for an understatement? Water's a valuable resource. Yeah. Hey, I want to update you on some of the information from our last two episodes featuring Game Golf. First of all, in just a week's time, a lot of Golf Smarter listeners have signed up and friended me on the Game Golf platform. I've also launched our first, and hopefully of many, our first challenge that's called the Golf Smarter Welcome Challenge. It's a low score challenge for September of 2014. Not just low score, but a low score based on your average game golf score, which means if you, you have to get some scores uploaded soon so that you can showcase a low score. So if you think of it this way, if you have an average score on Game Golf of 95 and it's not something you enter, it's just as you upload your rounds, it'll start averaging it out. So if you have an average score of 95 and shoot a 91, that would beat someone who has an average score of 77 and then shoots a low score of 74 sometime this month. This challenge is open to all listeners, members or not, and anyone is eligible to win our grand prize of a Golf Smarter divot repair tool. Now, if you've not purchased your Game Golf yet, remember, they've just lowered the retail price down to $199 US. Also, Golf Smarter members receive an additional exclusive 10% discount from that $199 with the checkout code GOLFSMARTER. And that exclusive discount ends October 1st, so you've got to act fast. Also, it's a very private and exclusive discount that cannot be made public, or we jeopardize our relationship with them, and they will get in trouble with their partners and customers. I also talked about how my index has improved since the first of the year when I started dissecting the data provided by my Game Golf. I am so excited. I'm so fired to let you know that the new indexes were posted yesterday. You know, they got updated the 1st and the 15th of the month, and I'm now down to a 10.3? I've been locked into a 12-13 range for a long time, well over a year. But 10.3? The unfortunate part of that number is now I am completely obsessed to get into a single digit, which I've never even considered a possibility. Even if it happens for only 1 month before these numbers balance themselves out, if I can actually say that I was a single digit player at one point in my playing career, well, it not only would be a wonderful thing, it would kind of validate the podcast, wouldn't it? It's like, yes, it does work. It does help. So know that when you purchase Game Golf, click on their ad at golfsmarter.com that will take you to their site. this is makes them aware that you are a Golf Smarter listener. A number of units were already purchased this past week, and you've connected to me on their system, but they really want to know that you heard about Game Golf on this podcast, and clicking on their ad on our homepage is really the only way to do it. Also, if you want to hear and see more about Game Golf, I've posted a couple new videos on our YouTube Golf Smarter TV channel about Game Golf. One is my round with CEO John McGuire. We had a lot of fun. And the second video is my own how-to and a review. And I'll put those both on our Facebook Golf Smarter group page as well. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.